Since iTunes only keeps the last 100 episodes of any show, some of our show topics that seem to help the most people are no longer available when people search on iTunes. So, in an effort to make that information available to more people, from time to time we're going to re-air some of our most popular show topics. You can also go to kickitnaturally.com and search for any topic in our search box. For now, enjoy this show that originally aired in 2014.
T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert, producer, blah, 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 blah.
Tomato.
Yes, also, tomato.
I'm not a tomato. I think that's the word. That's the word of the day today.
Oh, tomatoes.
I mean, how many shows have we had now?
Oh, this is going to be our 27th podcast.
Yeah, and we have never once had a word of the day.
I know. We also need to give away prizes, too.
How about a tomato?
Yeah, we'll send you a tomato.
It's a today. Solid plan. Yeah,
exactly. If this is your first time hearing us today, TC was a touring comic. Obviously, he wasn't funny, though.
Tomato!
Exactly. When he lost his voice for 8 years and 23 doctors couldn't help him. So he went a little psycho researching nutrition and how the body works, and now he teaches what he learned in books, movies, and these radio shows.
Here's the show.
Yeah.
Gives away prizes.
Exactly. Gives away tomatoes. We also have Hottie Patati, Will Schmidt, today in with us. Hey, how you doing?
Good. How
good,
you doing?
Good.
Hello, Will Schmidt.
Hello.
Will is a cool personal trainer, nutritionist here in Hollywood.
And, all the fancy stars.
Yeah, he's got fancy stars.
If someone has a show, they work with Will.
Exactly.
Jessica Alba. No.
Oh.
Jessica
Alba.
No, I don't train her. I just saw her and I'm still tripping out about it.
Uh-huh. Well,
I saw that update. I wanted to ask you about that.
If you talk to her again, tell her that you work with the guy that was brought in and taught her how to... A bartend in that movie, Honey.
Honey? Okay, I'm sure she'll remember you. No,
but she's a bartending, and I'm like hiding behind the bar telling her how to do stuff.
Oh, okay.
Which is funny because you don't drink. So I don't know how you would know how to make drinks.
I bartended for like 10 years.
Oh, wow.
I was a bottle flippy.
Why didn't you tell me?
Fire.
Was this why you couldn't talk? You'd just be like the mime bartender?
Yeah. No, it was before, way before all that.
Well, if I'd have known that, I'd been making you make me drinks all along.
I know. That's why drinks. I kept it quiet.
Okay. All right. Because we're fancy now, today's show is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Yeah, okay, so if you haven't liked us yet, you need to go ahead, drop everything you're doing. If you've got the kids, anything, just drop them. Go on to Facebook and like us at Kick It In The Nuts. We're going to post topics there every single week about future shows that we're going to be doing, and you guys can ask questions you want us to cover, and we'll cover those questions.
But maybe not this many questions.
Yeah, we have a lot of questions today, so today may be two shows.
We have to break this up.
To be continued show.
I guess that's a hot topic.
It is, and this is my favorite topic. If you've listened to the other podcasts, uh-huh. You know how much I love digestion.
Uh-huh. And every time we talk about digestion, it usually allows us to bring up Kenna's years and years of diarrhea.
Yeah, exactly.
She likes to go back.
Exactly. Yeah. They love to bring up my diarrhea. So
you know, we also have a lot of previous episodes on specific topics.
We sure do.
That we've covered. So we may not go into as much depth in some of these, but we can point you to the full episodes that you can go and find. And what other episodes do we already have?
Why are you asking me that right now when I don't have it right in front of me? It's the third one in.
Oh.
We've covered a lot of topics. So many topics that I had to
write
down.
You're dragging it out.
Yeah, here I go. Okay, so if you're dealing with any of the following issues, we have full episodes on them. Understanding constipation. I don't really know that there's much to understand. You're constipated.
Huh.
Understanding IBS, Crohn's, and colitis. Food sensitivities and food allergies, and you can find those by searching for Kick It Naturally on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you like the show, please be sure to leave us a review. No more hate mail for me, though.
Yeah. And there was another show on reflux, heartburn, and GERD, too. So we might get into that some today, too.
Oh, yeah.
But the main goal of this show in particular is just to maybe not go as deep into some of those topics, but to kind of answer people's questions that just have to do with digestion and why does my stomach hurt and why does stuff never come out of my butt when I want it to, and those type of things where we want people to be able to understand that there are answers to your issues. A lot of people just feel like, well, I've always been this way and I'm stuck this way. You see a lot of people like that, Will?
I do, yeah. A lot of people, like, they'll come in and say, oh, well, I've always only gone to the bathroom once every other day.
Right.
And you ask them, they're constipated, and they're like, no, I just go once every other day.
Yeah, I go once a week, I'm fine.
Right, in my book, that's not fun and not healthy. So I think they're so common that people just assume that that's just how it is. Like, everyone's right. really gassy and constipated, or sometimes has diarrhea or painful bowel movements, and it's doesn't need to be that way, and it has lots of other bad ramifications if it is that way for a long time.
Right, and like every other commercial is about reflux or heartburn, so people just feel like, oh, everybody has that, so I'll just go ahead and keep having that.
Yeah, and it's really not okay if you think about, like, if you look at, like, the digestive system and what it is to the person, it's pretty much the same thing that the root system is to a plant. So if you've ever gardened anything, or if you have ever seen a plant, you probably know it has roots. And just imagine, like, how long is that plant going to thrive if its roots are all messed up?
Right. Well, you cut the roots off completely and they're not there anymore.
Right. That. So it's not just like, oh, it's uncomfortable to be constipated or whatever. It leads to most of the health problems that we see today. Not all. There's certain car accidents, probably.
Right, yeah.
Maybe if you were...
I had a poor digestion, so I had a car accident.
If you had, like, diarrhea in your car and you're, like, flipping out, like, you could get into an accident.
Yeah, I have told a cop that before, and it got me out of a
ticket. I've heard that works. Diarrhea, yeah.
Was that plan B after the show cleavage, or did you just go right to the diarrhea?
I went right to the diarrhea. Tears and everything.
So, Will, do you want to talk a little bit about the process of digestion, just really quick, so we can have a base of what we're going with?
Yeah. The two main points that we like to focus on, and there's more to digestion than just this, like the whole intestinal flora and, like, water flow and things, but the two main things that we want to point out and focus on, because they're so fundamental and usually the cause of most people's problems, is the acidification of the food in the stomach and then the emulsification and alkalization of the food by the bile. So when you eat food and it goes into your stomach should secrete a lot of stomach acid, hydrochloric acid, and sterilize the food, kill everything that can't survive an acid environment, break down proteins into amino acids. And then that food leaves the stomach after the acid does its job and enters the start of the intestinal tract called the duodenum. And that's where your gallbladder should squirt bile, which is an alkaline liquid soap that should alkalize the food and create this big chemical explosion where most of the nutrients are liberated from your food, and also the fats get broken down by that soap into usable lipids. Then the rest of the, after that pH is neutralized by that acid bath and the alkaline bath by the bile, then the food works its way through the intestinal tract and the flora helps extract more
all
nutrients.
Those other things.
I just
go
saw
on.
A whole movie montage with that.
You like that?
Like when you said liberated and stuff, like they were all like,
free. Yeah.
Little dances.
That's how I was thinking of it.
Yeah, so it's that process of the acid meeting the alkaline bile that kind of busts everything apart, and that has to happen for us to be able to pull nutrients out of the food. So we'll be getting into more details of that when we go into some questions, but that's the very broad basis of how digestion works. And a lot of people don't understand that, because if they did, they wouldn't take a drug that turned the acid off, because you just turned off at least 50% of the digestive process.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about the digestive process is that you have to have the acid and the bile, both things functioning, or you can't break that food down all the way.
Yeah, it's think of like a battery. It has to have a positive and a negative charge for those ions to run. Like,
right.
If both are not happening, then you don't get that explosion. You don't get that liberation. Everyone's still in
prison. There's no dance.
Mm-hmm. There's no dance party. There's no Braveheart celebration. It's just foods that's not broken down well. And then that food, even if it's like free range, farmers market, organic, even if you grew yourself, whatever, that food ends up occurring to your body as a toxin because it's not broken down into usable bits. And like you say in your books, like your body doesn't know what to do with like peanut butter sandwich in the bloodstream.
Right. So you could still be eating very, very, very clean, but if you have some type of imbalance or your digestion isn't working, you're basically you could still gain weight.
Right.
You could still shove things in fat cells or not be able to break it down.
Right, totally correct. Because your body breaks a peanut butter sandwich into vitamins and minerals and amino acids and fats.
That sounds so good.
And it can use all those things. But it doesn't know what to do with peanut butter sandwich.
Yeah.
I know what to do with the peanut butter sandwich.
Right.
So let's get into some questions and we'll see where this takes us. And we'll see what we get through in this show.
James from Irvinus, Florida. Always eat fresh and they say live cultures are good. Who's they?
And this is just some people. Okay. You know, and this is good because this is pretty typical of what people think as far as digestion is. They think, when they hear digestion, they think take a fiber and probiotics. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much the only information that's out there for the public. So, James, no. but it's good. You know, you do want to eat real food, and he's saying to eat fresh, but like Will was just saying, if you can't digest that, eating
you're just
fresh.
Spending money on
right, you're just paying for more expensive discomfort.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And this goes like into a lot of the stuff that I see when people take on the body ecology diet and uh-huh. they're just doing a bunch of fermented food all the time.
Sure.
And my experience is that my friends and clients that have done that usually feel good for the first like month or two, and then they're just like, I can't stand any more like sauerkraut or kefir or whatever uh-huh. else. Because you don't need to keep on pouring probiotics into the system. It can actually be kind of like harmful if they're overpopulated and oversaturated. It's kind of like, I like to think of it like fish in your fish tank. Like you don't need to keep putting more fish in your fish tank if they're still alive, you know?
Right.
You know, maybe
right.
if you kill them all, then you should look at like why you killed them. It's awful right. of you. But if they're alive, they will tend to stay alive and keep doing their job and even like, you know, proliferate and make more of their own stuff. So you don't have to continually repopulate yourself with probiotics if your system is healthy.
Right. And the thing is, understand that that gut flora is, you need to have it there. It has to be there. There's a lot of things that they do that make the whole function of digestion happen. You know, they're making B vitamins, they're doing all this stuff, they're cleaning off intestinal walls, but just adding more probiotics, even if you have none in your system, maybe you took an antibiotic and wiped everything out, but even if you don't really have anything in there, just adding probiotics is not going to fix issues that are not functioning correctly, like acid production or bile flow.
Yeah. And when those things are functioning well, it usually helps really make the internal terrain a healthy place for probiotics to live. So you don't even necessarily have to supplement with them. If those two points are working well, it's like a healthy little field and stuff just starts to grow there.
Right, you know? Right.
All right. Madeline and Deanna both have similar questions about bloating. Madeline from Fremont, Kentucky. Can you explain why I only get bloated when I eat a lot of carbs? You may read the other one as
sure,
well.
Yeah.
And Deanna from Orlando, Florida. Bloating. What can I do about it?
What's up, Deanna? I used to live in Orlando, but I don't know Deanna. We can still be friends, though.
Yeah, maybe.
Will, do you want to talk a little bit about what bloating is usually caused by, and then we can look at the carb aspect?
Yeah, I mean, in hearing their questions, like I'm pretty sure we can talk about both, that they're talking about bloating in their stomach, but they might also mean like bloating, like they're getting puffy. Yeah, and the puffy side of it is, when you eat carbs, your body creates insulin to help usher those sugars into the cells. And insulin elevation causes sodium retention, so people feel puffier and stuff. And that's why bodybuilders don't eat carbs before a show, because they can make their skin tighter and their insulin levels down. And with that, their body retains less sort of water in between the interstitial fluids. Mm-hmm. So bloating like that would happen whenever you eat carbs, because it elevates your insulin. And that's different than, like, people are so afraid of salt because they're afraid that will cause bloating. But
they think that's what bloating is from.
Right. But it's the insulin that's causing the sodium retention. Like, you can eat plenty of salt, but if your insulin levels are low, it's not going to go into the interstitial fluid space. So that's one kind of bloating. But if you're looking at it, like, in the stomach, carbs are digested mostly by the bicarbonate that your saliva, like, helps secrete. So you're, whenever you eat carbs, you will create a more alkaline environment in your stomach because of your salivary contributions. And that creates a little high school volcano experiment in your stomach when the, like, the alkaline bicarbonates from your saliva mix with the stomach acid, you're going to get some fizzy, bubbly mess. So that can make you feel bloated in your stomach.
Right. And for most people that are experiencing something like this, eating carbs should not make you feel bloated, but if you don't have the proper stomach acid, then even doing something like adding a little more enzymes from saliva that can alkalize a little bit are going to push you way over and you're going to be way, way bloated. Mm-hmm. But anybody that is getting that bloat from anything that they eat really is almost always not making enough hydrochloric acid. And that's there's bacteria that can live in the stomach when there's not enough acid in there to kill it, and they set up a little camp and they have keg parties and such, and that bacteria creates gas, and a lot of times when you eat carbs, it excites those bacteria and they create even more gas and it expands and you expand and you feel horribly bloated and disdained.
Yeah. So on top of the alkaline bicarbonates from your saliva, also, like, the bacteria in your stomach can contribute, just like the yeast in beer ferments the sugars there, like, makes the pressure in the can when you open a beer.
Right.
Right, Kenna?
Right. How about that?
So if someone can improve their acid production or supplement with HCL and improve their stomach acid levels, then when they eat carbs, they will generally do much better. Mm-hmm. And they won't have that bloating situation once they're at an acidic level enough to make the stomach acid. Mm-hmm. If you want to figure out if keto is right for you or your body chemistry, check out a new podcast, Chat the Fat. If you know me at all, you know I believe there is no diet that is right for every person. But if major weight loss is your goal, nothing is faster or easier than keto if it's right for you. So my co-host Nissa Braun and I will help you figure out if you can use keto to get past your weight loss plateaus or improve other health issues. Just search for Chat the Fat on iTunes or Stitcher, or go to chatthefat.com to learn more.
Dennis, constant damn flatulence despite loads of whole grains. Well, I'm sorry, Dennis, and I'm sorry for your friends.
Yeah. So here's what whole grains do for flatulence. They do nothing.
Yeah. Well, they contribute more usually.
Yeah, I don't know where. I don't know. You know, people, it's all about whole grains is the healthy thing to eat, but it's a story, and it's a fictional story that, yes, it can be a better choice for some people, but if you're someone who has problems with grains at all, then whole grains could even make it worse.
Yeah, they're going to be even harder to digest than, like, say, some broken down flour. Mm-hmm. And grains, being a plant, they don't want you to eat them. Like, they don't want you to digest them. So they have these digestive inhibitors that block you from being able to break them down easily. So that can, like, go slower through your intestinal tract, but also cause all sorts of fermentation. And there's starches in there that little bacteria will also, like, ferment, just like in the stomach. It'll do that in the intestinal tract, too, as those carbs go through you. And that can create a lot of gas.
Right. And, you know, think about that if you don't have that acid from the stomach and the bile from to neutralize it and get that sizzle where everything breaks apart. If you don't have that, the way your food breaks down is by rotting and fermenting. And both of those activities create gas, which now is expanding in the intestinal tract until you push it out and your girlfriend punches you in the face and says, get out of here. Mm-hmm. So,
or holds you under those sheets and then holds you there.
That's it. Do you want to explain yourself?
Oh, no.
Yeah, that must be a different game.
Okay. Oh.
But so it doesn't really matter. You know, you could be eating foods that were actually healthy for you, that were not grains at all. But if you weren't digesting them, there could still be a lot of gas that comes in. And we find that a lot of people that have chronic gas like that often have a bile flow issue where the bile is not flowing well, so there's no sizzle where stuff can break down.
Mm-hmm. And we'll see that too when people start trying to eat healthier, when they go on lots of salads and more raw vegetables and things like that. Those plants are, like when we cook them, it makes them a little easier to digest or slightly pre-digested like that. So people will try to go like eat raw broccoli or celery sticks or more greens, and they'll just get horribly gassy because their digestion just isn't on par to like break that stuff down.
Right. But when you improve digestion, we notice that gas does seem to improve a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. All right. Jill.
Quinoa.
Quinoa rips my stomach like razors. Wow. Love it. Can't eat it.
You can pet it.
Yeah.
You couldn't make
I don't even know that I've ever tasted it.
It's okay.
Yeah. I don't know that I'd eat it if it ripped my stomach like razors.
Yeah, so the odds are that it probably does not rip your actual stomach. It's probably not happening in your stomach. It's probably a discomfort that comes further down the line. And it could be an issue of you're not breaking things down well enough, but it could also be an issue where digestion has been off for so long that grains are giving you any type of grain, even a quinoa, which is a much more gentle and usually people do a lot better with that than they do other grains. But it could be causing you problem just because of that.
Mm-hmm.
You're okay with that?
I'm okay with that. I do totally agree. Like most grains, like wheat and stuff, the more dense ones are a lot harder. But yeah, if you have issues with carbs in general, or if you have particular lectin allergies to different grains, then you might want to avoid those things until you really improve your digestion overall.
Right. But if it's just sitting in your stomach and it's not moving, then you probably don't have enough stomach acid to digest anything. And if you improve that, you may see that may be enough to improve the situation. But you could also fix digestion. And if you've created this trouble with grains of any kind, or even a specific one like that, it may take quite a while of eliminating it to be able to do it again.
And if you find other particular foods like that are issues, you might want to listen to our episode on food sensitivities. Because sometimes people will think that, oh, I'm just allergic to quinoa or whatever else. And there's maybe more to it, the overall system being off.
Right.
Alex from Tucson, Arizona. Anytime I eat breakfast before 10, I am sick all day. If I eat after 10, I get hypoglycemic symptoms. I start to shake and can't think straight. Why? I do have celiac, and it sucks.
I think it's best, Alex, to eat breakfast right at 10. It sounds like you can't do anything before and anything after, but if you eat right 10 at 10.
10 on the dot.
Right. Which, if you go to McDonald's, I guess they stop serving breakfast somewhere around there, and you'll have to work out something with the manager. And we recommend that.
You could order it at 9:59, and it would be to you probably by 10, and then you could eat it.
See? We're here. We provide solutions, is what we do. A lot of people that don't feel well when they eat early in the morning, it's often because the food that they ate last night is still sitting there in the system. It's not digested. It's not broken down. And it's creating all these gases and toxins. And the body's like, look, don't give me something else. I haven't finished dealing with what you gave me last night. And so if that food is still trying to break down and you put something else in on top of it, then it's going to exacerbate any nausea and toxic situation.
I have a question. How long does it take for something to go through your body and be digested? Like if I eat it this morning, when's it coming out?
Maybe we could flag something.
Yeah.
We could put like a little...
Yeah, put something, wrap it, a little...
like a marble,
flag.
Yeah,
like a flag. Ribbon around it.
Right. Yeah, so we'll get back to
you. I'll eat one piece of corn and I won't chew it.
Yeah. So we'll get back to you on the next episode and we'll be sifting through Kenna's poop until next week.
Okay, maybe we'll find my engagement ring.
Yeah.
But that really, your question, Kenna, that really depends on the person. You know, like if you have more acid, it's going to move through you quicker. If you have no bile flow...
Small snowflakes.
Yeah.
But generally, I mean, is there like a time frame? Like generally, you're like if you had good digestion, it's supposed to be 8 hours or something.
Well, you say that like in the stomach, that you hope that everything has moved out of the stomach in a couple hours. That's kind of what you think in the stomach. But then that's a whole different story moving through the intestinal tract.
Oh.
What was your question?
But his thing, so when we look at the hypoglycemia, if he waits too long, you want to look at, like you said, the foods that you maybe ate the night before weren't broken down. And you want to look at, like, what kinds of macronutrients were those? Like, was it protein heavy or fat heavy or carb heavy? And you want to take steps to try to correct your ability to digest those different things. So you might want to go through the free course that we have on correcting digestive issues at kickitinthenuts.com to help identify what part of your digestion is off. Like, do you not have enough acid or is your bile not flowing well? And if you're not, if you're like trying to get your bile to flow well and it's challenging, it's going kind of slow, you may want to think about not really eating a lot of fats until you fix that. Because like you said to me before, like if you can't digest a certain food, you shouldn't eat it. Like right. It's not going to go well.
Not just because all the cool kids are eating it.
Yeah. Even if you totally need fats in your diet, like maybe it's something your chemistry shows you really need more saturated fats or fatty acids, don't eat it until you can digest it. So learn how to like identify when your stomach acid is on point, your bile flow is on point, and then start to incorporate those foods into your program.
Right. So what's going on with Alex is, you know, if you look at a lot of obesity issues, it goes back to a kind of a starvation situation where the person is eating something, but their digestion is not functioning, so they can't break it down into the nutrients that the body needs to use. So the body says, hey, I saw that come in, but I'm not getting nothing. So send me something else. So they're kind of starving even though they're eating. So with Alex, you know, if he feels like he's getting into that hypoglycemic situation, don't look at the nausea and feeling drought and awful as the same issue as the hypoglycemia. The hypoglycemia could be that you've run out of fuel because either you're eating the wrong kind of fuel and you're burning through it too quickly, or you're just not digesting enough to pull enough resources that your body can use. So if you try to keep going without eating, you kind of feel like you're going to pass out a little bit.
Hmm. Richard, how does corn repair itself inside the body and come out whole again, thus being a reason I don't eat corn nuts? I think you need to chew.
Yeah, chewing is good, but maybe corn is magic.
It may be. I have the same issue with pine nuts. I'll have pine nuts in a salad, and then the next time I poop, I'll see whole pine nuts.
And how long does it take for you to see those pine nuts?
It seems like it's like that night or the next morning. It's like, you know, within the next day. So that's, I guess, how fast my digestion's working.
So
does that mean that you're not you're not chewing it properly? I mean,
yeah, I'm almost sure it's not putting itself back together in your body. Maybe. And same with corn. And corn is just a thing that's harder to break down like pine nuts. So if you might be having digestion enough to function through the easier things to process, but then with something hard like that, like corn or something, it doesn't, and it comes out the other end like it's still on the cob.
But corn's so soft.
Yeah, but it's not so easy to break down.
I think more of the corn that we eat is genetically modified than we realize.
Right.
And your body's like, why is there plastic in my food?
Yeah.
You know?
It breaks down in its Tupperware. Right. Oh, yay, I got a new Tupperware plate. Woohoo. All right, Richard. Good luck. Melissa and Chuck both have similar things. I can't crap. Stupid IBS. And Chuck from Sioux Falls City, Iowa. How about GERD and IBS? So we'll just put those two together since they're asking about IBS.
Mm-hmm. Well, with IBS, we had a whole podcast on that one. So you might want to go back and listen to that.
And GERD.
And we talked, and we talked about how we don't like the term IBS because it's this big blanket thing for something's off in your digestion.
Right.
I thought IBS meant you went to the bathroom all the time.
There's, you know, IBS, it's just irritable bowel syndrome, and it can mean that I haven't pooped this month, and it can also mean I pooped 7 times during this sentence. So they give it such a broad name, and the underlying causes for those two issues are completely and horribly different for most people. So you put somebody in this same category and they're all in the same party, but it's very different issues. So if you can't poop and you're chronically constipated, you know, the two main causes of that are either that the stool is not acidic enough, so it'll move very slowly, like Will was saying, or there's an anabolic imbalance at the cellular level where the body doesn't send enough water to the bowel and it gets all dried up and crusty and you got to yank it out with a shovel or something. It won't move at all. So, but fixing those can really help that.
What about a colonic or something?
A colonic might spray something out, but you're not fixing the problem.
Well, yeah, but at least you'll get some relief.
If it's from an anabolic imbalance where everything's too dry. But, I've heard from a lot of clients that are chronic constipations that's how they poop, is they go and get a colonic once every 4 or 5 days.
Wow.
Like, that's their
method
expensive. Of pooping.
Wow, that's an expensive poop.
Right, yeah. It's even more expensive than toilet paper.
They need to look for gold in it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I haven't really seen any cases of constipation where that wasn't the case, where they either didn't have enough acid or they were too anabolic.
Right.
Yeah. So check those out. You can learn about those markers of if you're too anabolic by going through that digestion course.
Yeah, the free digestion course teaches you how to look at your own physiology and simple tests that you can do at home. So you can look at, okay, do I have an anabolic imbalance or is it probably just the low stomach acid thing?
Yeah. And then with the GERD, the gastroesophageal reflux disease. Yeah.
Impressive.
So there's different causes of that. Usually that happens also because of not enough stomach acid.
So yeah, break it down. How's that work?
Yeah. So it's kind of the whole big secret behind the antacid industry is that our reflux and issues like that, heartburn, burping, bloating, that kind of stuff happens because of this whole little fermentation like situation in your stomach where it's not acidic enough so the bacteria can live in the stomach, and then they do what you said they do. They ferment the food that you eat. Like I mentioned, beer ferments the sugars and grains and creates bubbles and air pressure. And with that, the contents of the stomach under that air pressure will sometimes, like that pressure will be enough to slip the valves of the stomach open and you'll regurgitate it. So you have reflux. When you acidify the stomach enough, all that bacteria dies, so you don't get that little like air pressure generation.
It's pushing everything back up.
There are cases of things like hiatal hernias and such where that's different, you know, and that can be really tricky and annoying to deal with. But most of the cases are because of the insufficient acid.
Right, and the trick that people don't understand is they're feeling burning, so the pharmaceutical companies tell us that's because we have too much acid, so just turn that off and you'll be golden. And when you turn that off, now you've turned off the acid, but that doesn't mean that reflux has stopped. You just don't feel it.
Mm.
But the problem is there's still enzymes in your stomach that are made to break down protein, which means they could be breaking down your esophagus tissue as it's refluxing back up.
So somebody thinks they're doing good because they're on this medication and they're really like still screwing up their esophagus.
Yeah, and that's not to say that, the stomach acid is going to do more damage than the enzymes, but you shouldn't feel like you've fixed everything by taking it. You know, even on all the packages and all the warnings, it says that this is created to use not for more than a 2-week period. And there's people that have been, prescribed this for 10, 20 years.
Wow.
But the trick is that not only will that acid kill the bacteria in the stomach, like Will was saying, but the little valve, the lower esophageal sphincter that closes so that the reflux can't come back up, that's triggered by stomach acid. And you have to have enough stomach acid to trigger that valve to close so then stuff doesn't come back up. So we find that unless somebody has that hernia situation, that they can add more stomach acid, and once they get to a high enough dose, it'll trigger that valve to close, and then they don't have the reflux anymore.
Well, here we go with another one. Brian, I can't say his last name, but I think he might be famous. Warrensburg, Missouri. A lot of acid reflux the past several years. Now at times my throat feels closed, making it hard to swallow.
Right. So you could be damaging, your throat from all that, the reflux there. So it is something that you want to address and
don't just put a Band-Aid on it.
Right. Yeah. You want to fix the issue. So take the free digestive course so you can see what's going on with you and see if adding more acid can fix that for you.
At kickitinthenuts.com.
Uh-huh.
Robin, GERD, very bad. Nothing works. Need Nexium, but too expensive.
Yeah, and this is a really hard thing for people to fix a lot of the time, usually because the stomach chemistry is so off for so long that sometimes it gets worse before it gets better. Like, as you start to acidify the stomach, like, say you try taking hydrochloric acid, you usually are, like, causing a big volcano thing happening going on in your stomach.
War going on. Yeah.
You're acidifying an alkaline situation with all this bacteria, and they're all fizzing and dying, and it's like a battlefield in there. And
people are waiting to be liberated.
Right, yeah. They're like, come on. And they get way more nauseous and way more reflux initially as that, not always, but a lot of the time. And they get scared, too, because, like, oh, it's more pain. It's getting worse. And if they are able to hang in there long enough to, like, actually change the pH of the stomach, once you get it below 4.5, it'll kill most of the bacteria in the stomach. And then you can start to, like, actually digest your food. And those symptoms of acid reflux and heartburn and all those things will start to get diminish and disappear.
All right. So think about what we were saying. You know, if you use a PPI that turns off the acid, that doesn't mean you're not getting reflux. It just means you don't feel it. So now let's say that you put some hydrochloric, you use a hydrochloric acid supplement to increase your stomach acid. So maybe you use one or two capsules. And so now you have acid in there. But if it's not enough to trigger the valve to close or to kill all the bacteria in there, now you're going to have reflux with acid in it, and it's going to hurt a lot more.
Yeah.
But that, again, most people, if they just increase the dose to a high enough dose to acidify the stomach enough, then the reflux stops altogether.
Yeah. And I also want to make a point, too, about when your stomach should have a resting pH of around 1. Like, that's crazy super acid. And a lot of people are doing things these days that are intentionally, unwittingly alkalizing their stomach, like drinking high pH water, that kind of thing. And so maybe they're taking hydrochloric acid, but they're also doing it in a protein shake made of 9.5 plus, you know, pH water.
Right.
So they're constantly, like, adding more, like, sort of chemical warfare to the whole mix. And so you want to make sure that, like, not only, like, if you do choose to get off your PPI, don't just slip in something else like pH alkalizing drops or high alkaline water and that kind of thing while you're taking your acid. Like, you want to go full out and make your stomach acid and not work against yourself just because it's pop culture to alkalize, you know.
Right, exactly. And people can get into buzzwords and do the wrong thing for them, even though maybe it was the right thing for somebody else. But don't look at it, Robin, like you need Nexium. It's not, you don't have a Nexium deficiency. That's not the cause of the problem. So look at what the actual cause is, and if you work to fix that, then you can see some relief.
Nyssa, how do I know when to decrease HCL if I never feel a burning sensation? Is nausea related to too much HCL?
So, Nyssa, I think is how you say
Nyssa.
It. Nyssa?
Nyssa. Nyssa.
Could be Nyssa, but I'm going to go with Nyssa. But she's obviously a book reader and understands how to use HCL. And we tell people when they start to use them that they start with one and then slowly work their way up. And if you get to a dose where you feel like this warming sensation in your stomach, then you know that you've taken more than your stomach needs. When you combine what your stomach may be making, and, you know, we don't know what each person is making, combined with adding more capsules in, you may get too much, and that's when you know to back down a little bit. But a lot of people never really feel that warming sensation. But if your symptoms start to, if they're gone, like you're not bloating and you're not constipated, and you don't have to be constipated to not have enough stomach acid. That's just one possible symptom. But if you're not burping or having reflux, all those issues that come from not having enough stomach acid, then you know that you can try to reduce a little bit and see if the symptoms still stay away. Mm. And if they do, you can keep reducing. But that's usually not the cause of nausea. Too much acid can feel uncomfortable. You may feel nauseous, but if you're consistently nauseous, it's usually a bile flow issue. Do you want to explain why that happened?
Yeah. So when you... About the nausea bit?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you don't have good bile flow, you're not going to break down the fats that you consume, and that will make you feel really gross. Like, I don't know if you ever tried to do, like, a liver or gallbladder flush where you drink, like, a cup of olive oil and a cup of lemon juice. Like, that was the most nauseating thing I've ever done. And it's just, it feels super gross when you don't have enough bile to match the fats that you eat. But that's also another good indicator that you can use along with like how to know how much HCL you should take. If you start to get loose stools or diarrhea, that's a for sure thing that you need to reduce your HCL dosage until those go away. And it may not be the case that, like, say you built up to 4 HCL and you got diarrhea, loose stools from it. You may still need to, like, get up to 5 because your stomach acid is on point. But if you don't have the bile to match that amount of acid that you're supplementing with, then it's going to come out running and loose.
Right. So you may need more acid. Maybe you don't qualify to increase it yet.
Yeah. So you have to take steps to focus on fixing your bile flow and then be able to, like, get up to the dosage of HCL that you need. But yeah, like you said, once you do get rid of all the symptoms of low HCL, which is like acid reflux, heartburn, burping, bloating, constipation, and low blood pressure, when you resolve those, you can start to experiment with reducing your dosage. And as long as those symptoms stay away, great, you can keep reducing and phase it out. But if you start to get those symptoms coming back, you should up your ante back up into that like range where you get rid of the symptoms again.
Yeah, you know, another issue that can be related with the nausea is that think about that the bile is where the body puts all the garbage that is trying to remove out the stool, out the back door. And so if your bile is not flowing, there's no exit strategy for all that filth and all those toxins. And it just kind of hangs out in the body and you start to become toxic. And that's usually the people that are having that chronic nausea situation is they're just so toxic that the body's like, just don't put anything else in here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to send you the signal of you're about to hurl so that you won't keep putting stuff in here because you're just making it worse. Now leave me alone. Mm-hmm. But if you can get bile to flow, toxins can get removed and you can emulsify those fats and now you're hurl free.
Right.
All right. Marissa from El Paso, Texas.
Do you know her?
I do, actually.
Just because she's from Texas?
What you said. If you have bloat or gas, use ginger. It relaxes the intestines. Constipation can be alleviated with a good dose of aloe. If chronic, it's time for a Senna product and extra fiber.
Senna.
I think is what they... Like Kenna, but right, Senna. Kind of like with it. An E.
And this is pretty typical of what you hear for advice too out there, because aloe can make things more slippery. So if someone's a little more constipated, sometimes it can give them a little bit of relief, but you didn't really fix the problem, especially if it's a low acid problem. And Senna can be effective too, but I find that clients that have come to me and have tried this, about 10% may have had some relief by using either of these. But for the real chronic situations, it's like the poop is just laughing at the aloe and the Senna. Like, yeah, that ain't going to work.
All right. Sorry to shoot you down, Marissa. Yeah.
So I think that we're going to have to hit the rest of these on the next show because we really have a lot. Yeah. So if we didn't get to your question, tune in next week and we're going to cover the rest of the digestion questions too.
Exactly. And if you're dealing with any of the following issues, we have full episodes on understanding constipation, understanding acid reflux, heartburn and GERD, understanding IBS, Crohn's and colitis, food sensitivities, and food allergies. And you can find those by searching for Kick It Naturally on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you like a show, please be sure to leave us a review.
If you didn't like it, then just pretend like you don't know those reviews.
Exactly, and if you hate me, don't write about it.
Yeah.
If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at Kick It in the Nuts.
So we'll see you next week, and we'll do more poop stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Bye-bye.